Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I am Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason. How are you doing?
We're at episode 74. We're almost at the big 75. If that, I don't know what anniversary that is, because I think most people have died before they've been married for 75 years. So.
Oh, that's sad. Yeah, well, we got to bring it down like right off the bat, Jason.
But for those who get to 75 years of marriage, they get diamonds? Diamond Jubilee? Is that
is it?
I don't know.
I would think you would get like a pill that would just like make you go to sleep.
Oh, man. Now we've gotten dark.
Wow. Where did that come from?
Yeah, it's diamond or platinum.
Diamond.
Something very, very rare and expensive because it's hard to get there. Well, we're not there yet. We're at 74. We got to work to get to number 75.
All right.
So the CW renewed everything this week.
Like, basically renewed itself, as you said.
It did. It renewed itself. It said, hey, CW, this is CW calling. You did a really great job. I love your shows. Why don't you bring them all back? Oh, well, I will, CW. I will bring them all back. Wait a second. Does that include a 12th season of Supernatural? Yes, yes. Why not 12 seasons of Supernatural? Why not?
But most importantly, obviously you knew that Jane the Virgin would get renewed, but the one that was always on the cusp, which was the big news out of that renewal, was Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Made it. Thanks, so Golden excited. Globes.
Yeah, right? The Globes didn't hurt.
No, it didn't hurt.
It did not hurt.
That's such a good show. I'm not quite caught up to current because I started it late. But I've got like two or three left on the DVR, but really good show. Just, I'm glad it's coming back because it's so different from anything else.
Exactly. And you know who, now we call him Shiny Failure on Twitter. He used to be an OG, a bit OG contributor to the first TVTM. And he says, when I tweeted that out, he said, "Stoked for more Crazy. My God, that show is great." Mm. And I was like, yes, absolutely it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. Really good. Don't let the name put you off. It owns the name. It mocks its own name.
Yes.
But it is I think people don't realize that it's kind of a musical, which is surprising. I think if you watch an episode, you'll be like, whoa, wait a second. What just happened? Why are they singing? Why is there a fantasy music sequence here? And the answer is, yeah, that's the show. They do that. They do that a couple of times in every episode. And it's great. And a lot of the moves, okay, I didn't mean for us to go down this path of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, but a lot of the moves on that show are not the moves you expect a TV show to make. Like, they set up these things that seem very sitcom-y almost, and you're like, okay, I see what they're doing here. And they almost never take that path. They set it up, and then they do something to subvert your expectation. I'm very impressed by that, because that's a tough trick to do that every week.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the unnatural rhythms of it are I love it.
And you know, you get your Flash and your Arrow and your Legends of Tomorrow. I don't know what they're going to do with that show with a second season, since I kind of can't even make it through an episode of it at this point. But maybe they'll turn it over and do something a little bit different. Maybe they're learning as they go.
It is kind of funny how these comic related franchises get a whole lot more rope than anybody else.
Yeah, what is that? I mean, I was going to say it's almost like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where it's great that they're bringing it back, I guess, but, you know, even if they correct their problems, is anybody going to be left to watch it? Because so many people bailed out of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for the same reason. I am a little surprised. Maybe they'll do this when they announce new show development. I keep waiting for them to announce a Friday night superhero show, because if you throw Supergirl in the mix, they've already got one superhero show Monday through Thursday. And at that point, you should just go all the way, I think. I think you get something on Friday, maybe get something on Sunday, and people can put on their underoos and watch superheroes every night of the week except Saturday, because, you know, Saturday doesn't have TV shows on because of the Love Boat or something.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, well, anyway, they're all coming back, including Supernatural. Those guys are going to, like, they're going to have story arcs where they fall down and break a hip. That is how long that show is.
That's
going to
be a good one. Yeah, their famous car, is going to end up being something else entirely.
Yeah, it's going to be a walker.
It's going to be a shuttle bus.
It's going to be the senior shuttle. They're going to take the senior shuttle from to the Denny's.
Yep.
And they're going to just going to be a ghost.
They're going to say, "Look, we got to get this demon."
Yeah,
let's get everybody in the back of the car.
There's a demon in working as a busboy at the Denny's at 4:30 when they're eating their dinner.
People will still be watching it. You know they will.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Yeah, sure.
It's something I would never do. I look at something that's been on the air for so many seasons, and people are still watching it. TV's supposed to bring you pleasure. It's just not something I would ever. I like my shows to last no more than 5 or 7 seasons max.
Yeah,
if you go 7, you better be the top.
As the because it's not a breakout hit, it's just kind of this. It's got its audience. It does well. They keep renewing it, but that also means like the stars and stuff are not asking for huge contract extensions with big raises that make the show, because that's usually what drives shows off the air, right? Is they just get more expensive as time goes on. And I get the sense that Supernatural doesn't get more expensive really. And so they could just kind of do it forever until, as The Simpsons once said, it becomes unprofitable.
Well, that's it too. I mean, that's, yeah, you shows go off the air, don't get renewed because they make 22 million audience, and then people say, "Oh, we all need a raise."
Oh, hey, so yeah. Actually, this is a question I have for you that based on this, it used to be conventional wisdom was that beyond a certain point, there was no point in keeping a show on the air,
right?
Because the actors all wanted way too much money, and because the syndication deals, you needed a certain number of episodes, and 100. Then beyond mm-hmm. that, it kind of didn't matter anymore,
right?
Because mm-hmm. you'd sold into syndication. I wonder if with streaming, if having a bigger catalog of a cult hit is not actually giving, I wonder if season 11 and season 12 of Supernatural are worth more now that we are living in a streaming world where people will be able to stream those episodes forever, if they're worth more now than they were back in the days of just, you know, it's more episodes in the syndication package.
Definitely. And because for all intents and purposes, the whole syndication market is vanished. It's gone. People no longer go to their local channel 36 way up on the analog dial and say, "Oh, they're still running all those episodes of Seinfeld. I'll watch that."
They'll watch like Big Bang Theory on TBS or something like that, maybe. But
absolutely, and those are big cable clearinghouses where those used to go to some other channels, and that's where, you know, years ago that's how it all was. That scatter market was all these regional channels buying syndication stuff, and no longer it's all going to go on to a streaming service. So you're right, there could be. I mean, but the interesting thing about that, and I think you're right about that. The interesting thing is that CW kept putting that show on, because if we're going to the 12th season of it, they went through the part where there really was no like Hulu and Netflix, and there was no actual syndication market. So they were getting renewed when there was no reason to renew them. So that's kind of fascinating in itself. The show is kind of amazing.
2005.
Yeah, like that must have been the time it was. Yeah, right.
Well, so, I think the CW. Oh, actually, you know what? You know how long Supernatural's been on the air? Supernatural's first season aired on the WB.
Wow.
Before it became mm-hmm. CW, so that's how long it's been. It survived the WB UPN merger, and obviously got enough in terms of ratings to keep it kind of going through the turmoil. I think there was probably a few years there when it was kind of like one of the only shows, if not the only show on that network that was working. So they're like, "Well, look, we've got bigger problems. This one's okay. We'll keep it around." And then after a while, you know, it just became a machine. And I think streaming did help it. I think people rediscovered that show or discovered it on streaming. And now look, it's going into its 12th season. That's crazy stuff.
Yeah. I think that whole being able to survive that long is really interesting. And, you know, people have asked, like, why I was one of the people ages ago every time I was at the CW session, it was always like, "Why are you guys here? Why do you still exist?" And, you know, I very famously asked Les Moonves sat in once when it wasn't Nancy Tellem. I think it was somebody was sick, but he sat in at TCA. A great throwback for him. He loved to be at TCA. So he had to sit in. At that session, I said, threw him a little softball, and then I said, "Hey, why are the lights still on at CW?" And he laughed. And I remember vividly remembering this because I had been asking the CW, how are you existing? Yeah, you, no one watches any of your shows. You talk about people talking about shows online, but there's nothing. And he very quickly came out and said, yeah, the network actually doesn't make money, but the shows make money. Huh. And I thought at the time, like, okay, could somebody have not said that like 4 years ago? Like, that would have been really helpful. But see, everybody's afraid to say we're not making money as a network, but our shows are making money. And I think they've hung out long enough now where we're into the Netflix and Hulu era where, yeah, you can – something like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend can get life again because it got, you know, a Golden Globe win. It got some more attention, and maybe people will eventually come to it. I hope they do.
You talk about Les Moonves. I read a story this week where he was asked about Star Trek. And again, that guy says, yeah, I love him. I don't necessarily agree with a lot of what he says or does, mm-hmm. but I love that he says it and he's unlike anybody else. So they were asking him about Star Trek and doing this Star Trek launch next year. And he said, it's the first clarity I've really gotten about this. He's like, look, you know, the bit most contentious thing when we separated Paramount and CBS was Star Trek. And that was the thing we had to fight over. And we decided that, you know, we would get the TV rights and they would get the motion picture rights and we would share the franchise. And we agreed to do a 6-month window after a feature where we couldn't launch any new Star Trek. And that's actually why it's not launching until next year, is because Star Trek Beyond is coming out in June. And so they can't contractually wow. launch it. And you definitely got the sense that he was not happy about that fact, but that was the deal that was made. And I just thought it was really interesting that like, how do we split up this franchise? So that guy, yeah, he says, and again, you know, why didn't anybody say that earlier? But he just kind of came out and said, no, this is what we did. We split it up and agreed mm-hmm. to give each other some distance, and now this is what we're gonna do.
We miss less. The world was so much easier when he just told the truth, like, yeah. We knew it, but no one would ever say it, and he's like, yeah, no, you're right, that show, yeah.
Well, now the CW is you know, their portfolio is pretty great, right? I mean, do you think, is the CW kind of a model for where the future of all network TV, because it's, you know, it's smaller and its ambitions are smaller, but it's really good at what it does?
Yeah, I think – I wish I had that answer, because I think you could certainly look to it. The problem is that they don't run any – you know, they don't do any – to my knowledge, right? They don't do weekends anymore, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah, and so what the networks have to back out of is the – you know, and we'll talk about this more, I'm sure, at some point. But they have to back out of the 22 hours – you know, a week of programming. That's killing them. So that's the problem. Whereas, you know, I think you're right. Like, you made a very good point saying, like, here's a show that's been around for 12 years and you never hear about the stars holding out. You never hear them say, oh, it's pointless to put it on now because we have 100 episodes and we can put it into syndication. They're doing something right. And maybe they just got a little bit more lean and a little more feisty and able to got through the lean times. And I know that it's, you know, they're happy to be in play. Let's put it that way. And I think bigger networks are now saying, oh, God, we are being scrunched down. And let's be find a gigantic hit. We're being scrunched down. And what will we be in the future? I don't, you know, who knows? But maybe that we can look to the CW for the future. And God, who would have ever thought that?
Yeah, when you're asking why they keep the lights on. Or
yeah, you know. That was the question, actually. Why are the lights still on at the
CW? Amazing. Yeah, they don't program very much at all, right? They program. It looks like they're programming 10 hours a week.
Yeah, so it's manageable. You can mm-hmm. you know, that's how you can make money in the international market. You can make stuff now. You make stuff on, and you know, Moonves is, by the way, a big proponent. You hear all this stuff about.
Well, that was the other thing he talked mm-hmm. about Star Trek, as he said, you know. You think this is a gamble, us going on streaming, but not only is the streaming performance of Star Trek really great, but we sold it into international markets and that paid for like 60% of the cost of the show. So it's not even a gamble. He said, there's no way we won't make that back in the US.
That's great, right? And also somebody who just says that, right?
Yeah. It just no artifice at all. It's like we sold it into international markets because CBS isn't interested in setting up its own international streaming service. Right. They sold it, pre-sold new Star Trek show. 60% of the budget is already covered just by the pre-sale. And then they're going to use it to launch or at least expand the launch and the visibility of their pay service. I mean, yeah, just. He knows where the, I mean, he's looking at the big picture, right? He's looking at,
we make
money here.
And he became a big friend of streaming when other people were like, well, maybe we shouldn't do this anymore. And he's just like, you know what? There's money to be had here. It's another revenue stream. And I think he's aware also, I mean, he's also smart enough to say you can do both. You can launch your own and you can still sell stuff to Netflix and Hulu.
Right.
And Amazon. And there's markets there. And if the, he's a good way, he's a mastermind at finding, making the numbers add up, even when people say they won't add up. And I like that about him. I like that he's like, yeah, let's not close the door unless we know there's nothing can happen there. So,
well, and CBS doesn't get enough credit sometimes for doing experimental stuff and not just doing Me Too stuff. They launched their streaming news channel, right? And that's a little unusual, but they didn't have a cable news channel, so they launched a streaming news channel. And you can find it if you don't know about it. You can go to their website, or you can find it on like Apple TV or anything like that. It's like a CNN, MSNBC, Fox News kind of news channel. I mean, obviously the budget's a lot lower. It's sort of like a local news, a little bit level of quality. But you know, they just decided to do it and see where it takes them, because eventually it won't matter that it's a streaming news channel, because they'll all be streaming.
They'll all be streaming. Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know. CBS, go figure.
Who knew?
HollywoodReporter.com is a place where people can find your review of something we talked about briefly last week: Bible Swords and Sandals, Bible Stories with a little bit extra of Kings and Prophets from ABC. It's on. You reviewed it. We should at least mention that you wrote a review of it that I'll read from the, I quote from the bottom line: biblically boring. Zing. That's it.
That was it.
That's it.
That was pretty much, if you scroll down the little TV review section and saw that, you might think I'm not going to watch that.
Yeah.
I hope people would read it, but that's always the worry.
This is the kind of review we read for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend the other day about the good old days of he was like, "Oh, do you miss the little man in the Chronicle standing up and sitting down and falling asleep?" And I was like, "Well, it's a great ratings. It's a great way to do public service and get people to know things. Went much better, much more creative than Stars." But I said, "Yeah, every time there was like a medium guy, he's kind of just barely looking up."
Yeah,
no one ever read that one.
No,
and it's like,
no, but the empty chair. You came to really treasure the empty chair, because that was just, oh, wait for this one. This is going to be good.
You didn't just fall asleep. You walked out.
Yeah, I love that. This week's episode of the TV Talk Machine brought to you by Harry's. That's
Yay!
Right. Fine shaving products. I've been using Harry's for a while now. And
I do too.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. So here's the deal. March, I got some numerology for you here. March,
okay,
is the third month of the year, but it's also the third anniversary of Harry's. This is a great opportunity for everybody out there. If you're new to Harry's, we've got a special deal. You can try three of their expertly crafted five-blade German razors. They bought the factory in Germany that makes their razor blades. Harry's owns it now. It's kind of amazing. You'll get those three five-blade razors, a handle, and their shave cream, which I really love. It's like this minty, it's really good shave cream. Mm. It has converted me. I will never go back to my Edge shave gel. $10 with the offer code TV Talk. That's right. So, you know, if five blades seems a little bit over the top, and yet I gotta say, I have never gotten a better shave than when I started using Harry's blades. I used to have all sorts of problems with shaving, getting the right equipment, having it not chafe my face and all that, and the five blade razor from Harry's does a great job. And like I said, I love the shave cream too, and the handle's beautiful. I got an orange handle now. They got this cool orange handle.
Giant's colors.
It's Giant's colors, that's right. I endorse this in wholeheartedly. So let's sum this up. 3 years in business, month number three, March. So, you know, it goes without saying, whatever that is. German engineered five blade cartridges, a close, comfortable shave, no cuts, no razor burn. Quality is guaranteed. A full refund if you're not happy with it. Factory direct prices. You cut out the middleman. It ships right to your door, so you don't have to wander the aisles of your local drugstore. Not good. I am always creeped out when I go to my local drugstore and then have to find a clerk to unlock the thing to give you the. Forget about it. And Harry's blades, half the price of the leading brands anyway. So why not do this? Over a million people have made the switch. Thousands more switch every day. Don't pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can get them for half the price at harrys.com. So $15, you'll get a razor, shave cream, three razor blades, $5 off your first order. So this is a even like, now how much would you pay? $15? I know that's low. We will give you $5 off of that if it's your first order using the promo code TBTalk. So stop overpaying for a great shave. Go to harrys.com right now, harrys.com, and enter code TBTalk at checkout. Thank you, Harry's.
Thanks, Harry's.
You guys all, you all have like your code for what those were called, though, right? Because you'd put in, you wouldn't like draw a picture of a man. No. You would say this
little
is rating one. Zero.
Mm-hmm. And Little Man 1 through Little Man 5, LM1, LM5.
All right. And LM1, there was no little man. He was gone already, Chief. He had left. Well, okay, biblically boring. What would you give that? Is that an LM2?
Well, we are actually reversed. LM1 was the best. Oh, LM5 was the worst.
Oh, okay. So was this an LM4 or an LM5? The
I think it's an LM4.
All right. Sleeping Man.
Sleeping Man. Because there's worse shows out there. And that's always what I always say. What is there worse? Is there a bottom somewhere else?
Yeah, you know, I think, and this goes back to what you just said. This is what's the greatest defense? It's probably that it's boring.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if something is entertainingly bad, then you could be excited by it. And if something is good, it's good. But it's the stuff that's in the middle that's just boring. I listen, one of my favorite podcasts is a bad movie podcast. And the thing that kills those guys when they watch, it's The Flophouse is the name of it, when they watch a boring movie, those are the ones that they're most offended by, because there's not even anything. Like, you start checking your phone, you're wandering around, you're stretching, you're laying down, you're falling asleep, because it's like, there's nothing here. Why am I like this? Much better to be enraged at how awful it is or laughing at how awful it is. But boring is the worst.
Yeah, boring's no good. And in this day and age with TV, platinum age, man, I always look at that and think, what are you doing? Why are you not like super motivated to make a great show? Or at least a functionally solid show like Elementary or something.
This seems like the kind of show that gets made because it's like assembled out of parts or out of a Mad Lib or something. It's like, well, people like Game of Thrones and the Bible miniseries stuff seems to do well, and there's definitely an audience for Bible themed things, and what could we do, like Game of Thrones meets one of those Bible miniseries? And you could see somebody kind of like pitching and spinning until they come up with this monstrosity of an idea that somebody has to put into a show, and then this is what you get.
Wow. I got to say something. I was just going to tell you a story, and then I thought, no, it's not. And then you just said what you just said, and I got to tell you, you were dead on. I actually was at TCA in January, and I can't even remember the guy's name, but the guy who's the executive producer of this series and the spokesperson for the show. So he was me. I don't know if he's one of the writers. Definitely the creator and executive producer. He was a snake oil salesman, and I remember thinking at press tour, like, wow, this dude, of course this show got made. This is exactly what you just said. Of course this show got made, because this guy goes into a pitch meeting, and he's sold you on Bible stuff. He sold you on Game of Thrones. He's sold you on international rights, because it's got this big cast, and it's a story forever. And the dude could sell. And yet, when we were sitting there, I'm like, I don't think this is Game of Thrones. Definitely not. And it's a little too sexy and crazy and like, you know, soapy for the Bible. So, okay, whatever. I'm not a programmer. But boy, it came out and it tanked. It tanked so hard the first episode. It was like, oof. You could hear it hit the ground.
The prophets should have seen it coming.
They should have seen it coming.
And lo, on ABC in the spring, there shall be a Bible show, and it shall be a failure. Something like that.
David and Goliath. And David is played by Hugh Grant, as I said in my review. sexy David.
Yeah. We got a couple streaming things to talk about before we go to the letters. Aaron Paul is back with The Path on Hulu. You're working on a review of that, right?
Yes, my review is done. It's just not up. I really liked it.
If we're very lucky, the magical thing will happen where your reviews get posted while we record. Probably not, though.
No, because it's going into the magazine next Tuesday.
That's right. You got to make us wait for it.
I know. It's funny, right? Yeah. That's how it works. Wrong with that.
That's fine.
Yeah. Baby needs new shoes.
So how is The Path?
It's really good, actually. And it's an incredible cast. Michelle Monaghan plays a woman married to Aaron Paul. Hugh Dancy from Hannibal is also in it. Yeah. And it's really interesting. So it's from a woman who was she's written some stuff, but nothing ever really took off. This is her big thing. But she was a staff writer and a producer on Parenthood with Jason Kadams, and he is an executive producer on this. So those two have put this together. It's her baby. And what's really interesting about it, I'm always attracted to shows about faith, because I think faith and religion are really interesting things to talk about if you can uncouple them from institutional religion and get to the point where you're talking about faith and wanting to believe in something, which, you know, I kept hearkening back to, like, X-Files, that I want to believe it was like a religious aspect of wanting to believe something was true. That's very tied into spirituality and faith. And so I went into this interesting because they basically are playing both sides of, like, if you can imagine such a thing, an idealized cult. And they don't want to be called a cult. They want to be called a movement. This thing's called Meyerism, from their founder, the Dr. Stephen Meyer or whatever. And it's founded in the hippy dippy late 60s and early 70s. And so they call it the Meyerist movement. They are a cult. There's, like, you look at this and you're like, oh my God, you guys are such a cult. And so the show actually lets you know they are pretty much a cult. They're effectively doing good work with the people who are in the cult for the most part, right? And they are the founders of it believe in the spiritual idea of being better person, being better to each other, and creating a better world. And then you layer on top of that, okay, now where does the taint come in? Where does the megalomania and the evil, where does that creep into it? And I found that really interesting, because they're playing both sides of it, so that you can actually be empathetic to the people in the cult, and then you can be, like, really suspicious about what they're doing. So I found it really interesting. It's a 10-episode first season. I watched the first four. Aaron Paul, because everybody loves Breaking Bad and Aaron Paul, he's great in it because he's the husband. Michelle Monaghan's family were original members of this movement / cult, and he marries her, so he's married into it, and she is a lifetime believer. But they're not, like, over the top, but it's great because he's beginning to have doubts. And it's basically told from his perspective of, like, uh-oh, you know, what – am I crazy, or is something – are we doing something that's not good here? It's really interesting.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, and Hugh Dancy is the leader of the group, and he's the one where you have to see where the taint comes in. He's part of it.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, so people should do that. That's on Hulu.
Hulu is really – they're cranking up their originals now.
Yep. They are. So that's on the heels of 11/22/63, which, you know, people should definitely check that out.
All right. So another streaming series that came out is Will Arnett's comedy series. Is that right? Flaked, which, like, everybody hates.
Yeah, it's Dan Feinberg reviewed that, but I wanted to talk about it because, yeah, it's unbelievable. On Metacritic, it's got like a 46. That's really bad for a series where you have Will Arnett writing it and Mitch Hurwitz producing it, 8 episodes. You were thinking maybe it was going to be funny. You would hope that maybe it'd tap into some magic. According to Dan and a lot of other people who reviewed it, it's not funny, and it's super LA-centric, which is one of my pet peeves. It's like everybody who lives in Los Angeles, where, you know, the home of the entertainment industry, thinks that everything they see around them is – interesting to the rest of the world. So apparently it's very hyper Los Angeles, like what neighborhoods are different. Well, if you live anywhere else, particularly in the Bay Area, we don't give a shit what your other neighborhood is like. Whoops, check the box.
Yep.
So that was a problem. And I guess like Will Arnett's character is – he wrote the whole thing. And then according to Dan and other people, it just – it's not funny. It's not insightful. And it just kind of happens. And then that's where you start getting into the question of like, okay, why does this show exist? But I think Mitch Hurwitz is going to come out of this unscathed because he was basically just a producer, didn't do any of the writing. But Will Arnett is a head scratcher. Why that guy can't catch a break and get into a really great show is beyond me.
Well, I mean, he got into The One.
He got into The One, and he does BoJack Horseman. And it's funnily enough, along with Aaron Paul. For an animated series. But yeah, he hasn't been able to strike gold post – everybody else kind of has.
Everybody else in Arrested Development has
it's kind of worked out for them.
Come to, yeah, something or other.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, so that's a no-go. But I had high hopes for that. And I remember thinking on Twitter, I was asking Dan, like, I was excited about it. He's like, oh, here's to the review. So, yeah, not good.
Oh, well. Want to do some letters?
Let's do some letters. You know what? I want to say one thing since we're talking about streaming.
Oh, you're Columboing me right now.
I Columboed you in the middle rather than the end. Well, I mean, it's early yet.
You may Columbo me at the end too.
That's right. I might have something that I come back on. A topic of a series that we talked about a number of times, Halt and Catch Fire. Season 2 is now streaming ahead of schedule on Netflix. So yeah, the group that's behind that, the guy who was executive producer, tweeted that out, I think, earlier today. And he was very excited for whatever reason. It's up on Netflix earlier than expected. And so you can watch the entirety of season 2 of Halt and Catch Fire. And I suggest that you do it. It's a really great series. Yeah.
All right, we're going to go to the letters. But first, I want to tell you about one of our sponsors. It is Audible.com. If you love books but can never find time to read them, Audible.com is the perfect solution. You can get audiobooks and listen to them while you're on the go, at the gym, during your commute, wherever. Audible.com has more than 180,000 different titles from the leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazine and newspaper publishers, and business information providers. Their app is free. It works on your iPhone or iPad, your Android phone, your Windows phone, whatever. You can also download and listen on a Kindle Fire, over 500 different MP3 players. And unlike a streaming or rental service, with Audible, you own the books. You can access them anytime and anywhere right from your device. They also have a great listen guarantee. If you decide you don't like the book you chose, no worries. You can exchange any book you aren't happy with for another title anytime, no questions asked. Because this is a TV podcast, I'm going to throw out a book that is available on Audible that I like, which is one of your colleagues, Mr. Alan Sepinwall.
Oh, yeah.
Wrote a book called The Revolution Was Televised, which is about the golden age of television. So back yes. back in the golden age, before we hit the platinum age. The Cops, Crooks, Slingers, and Slayers. That's one of my favorite. Who changed TV drama forever. And it's on Audible. You can listen to that book. You don't have to. I was like, I wonder if there's a TV critic book up there. And sure enough, it's there. So that's one example. Or you can get whatever you want. And you get a free 30-day trial membership. You go to audible.com/TV Talk today, and you will start a free trial. So show your support for this podcast and get a free 30-day trial at audible.com/TV Talk.
Excellent.
Look at that sponsor that we had.
Look at that.
How about that?
I like that. That's the perfect for me, too, because I don't get a chance to read books. So if I can hear them, I'd be much better.
You can hear them. You could do they're probably good books about, I mean, there's fiction, but there's also like, they're probably really good books about music out there. I wonder if books, audiobooks about music topics use like little musical, if they could embed some of the audio in the audiobook. That would be really, that'd be better. I always feel that way when I'm reading a book about music or TV or something. It's like, come on, but I can't see it right now.
I can't
hear it right now while you're talking
about it. I may remedy that very soon on the music front.
All right.
As we know.
Yep, we're teasing things that might be happening. Mm-hmm. All right, here's some feedback for this from the listeners.
Okay.
First off, Craig Newmark tweeted, great podcast about our episode the last time. Now, you may not know, if you don't know who Craig Newmark is, you may know his list.
He has a list. Craig has a list, and it's pretty famous.
Yeah, actually. Craig's list is famous.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody out there just went, oh, that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, now what's on Craig's great podcast list? Apparently we are, so thank you, Craig.
He's been Craig has been a great supporter of the Bastard Machine for a long time.
Yeah.
TV Talk Machine, which is great. It's always nice. In fact, he's what a great ambassador, because I don't know how long ago it was. Craig met Janice Min, and of course my boss, and said nice things about me, which she passed on at our dinner, and I was like, yes, excellent work.
Yeah, it's good. Talking you up to your boss is the best.
Such good points. Yes. You can't get better points than that. No.
No. Very good. Thank you, Craig. Another tweet. This was more directed at me, but I thought it was really funny. This is from...
Are they calling you out for being wrong again?
This is from listener Jamie in the +44 who said, well, I wanted to hear more about skunks. As a Brit, this is baffling to me. I don't know what else. This is not a skunk cast, so we can't go into detail, but they are these kind of cute little, well, they're not even that little. They're kind of cute
animals.
Are there
no skunks in England?
There are no skunks in England. I looked it up. I didn't even realize this, that the skunk is basically native to North America, and it's in some parts of South America. But basically, the skunk, the striped skunk that we know, is a North American creature. So apparently the only skunks in England are kept as pets, which is crazy, because you got to remove the scent gland from the back of them. But they're like, you know, they're like, I don't know, weasels or ferrets or something like that. They're
not an attractive animal,
and
despite the black and white thing. It's not like this racing stripe. It's not cool.
I could see why people might like skunks, but they have the scent glands and they will spray when threatened, and that is their defense. And that my dog ran right over to the skunk in the backyard, and so it did what it was born to do, which is make my dog smell terrible.
Oh my God! Yeah, my place is littered with like. Yeah, skunks surround this street in my flat. Summer is terrible.
And so also what Jamie said was that he's baffling that there's wildlife in around where people live. And I live in the suburbs, but you live in Oakland. I mean, you don't live in like the most urban part of Oakland, but you still live in I've been on your street. That's the city, man.
Yeah.
And there's skunks and
there
squirrels
skunks.
And rodents. Yeah. And I mean, there's lots of life running around. I don't know how the skunks
going
do
out. Yeah.
I have coyotes go down my street every now and then too, but I'm about 5 blocks from open space. So there's,
they could come down the hill for you.
Yeah. They're like motoring between the different parts of the open land. They'll come through my neighborhood on the way to somewhere else. That happens sometimes too, but
and you probably have deer too, right?
Oh yeah. Actually the on-ramp to the freeway, I'm right by the freeway, and I you got to be careful when you go on our freeway on-ramp, because there are often deer standing in the road.
You caught them in a meeting. They were planning. They're coming to your house.
They're overthrowing. Yeah. They're working with the horses on a
do not trust
conspiracy to get me. Anyway. So Jamie, there you go. You can look it up. The skunks, they're in North America. They're
awful. Consider yourself lucky.
Yeah. Seriously. They smell really bad. And if like one sprays anywhere in your neighborhood, you will smell it. And
it blocks away. It's insane. Yeah. And if you get one smelling, this is too much skunk, I know, but if you get one too much skunk cast
is it's happening right now.
There it is. If you get one like spraying in the back where I live, I've got a two-story flat and I'm at the top. Apparently the skunks are easily frightened because they're always spraying.
Yeah.
And if they spray like real close to your place and you have the windows open, it burns. It burns your nose. It's like, it's like gasoline.
Yeah, it's really bad. The after effect smell is bad, but the like direct effect smell is the worst. Trust me. I washed my dog 10 times the other week. Dean of the 707 has reported
still
traveling. He's now in the 205.
Is it possible that Dean is independently wealthy?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. This seems like he's finding himself and taking a little trip. Maybe he's between jobs. I don't know what the story is. I don't remember. He may have told us and I've just forgotten. But anyway, he's in Alabama now, and he said he's watching Heart of Dixie for the first and hopefully the last time.
Yes, not good.
And also, he's going to the 16th Street Baptist, site of HBO's Four Little Girls. Remember that? That was Spike Lee did that?
Spike Lee did that. A great documentary.
So, hey, Dean.
We have such an eclectic listening bunch.
I know.
It really is impressive.
It is the power of the simultaneous worldwide release.
No doubt.
It really powers the whole thing.
No doubt. Wait till we get like a bunch of skunk fans adding on.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird, too, because it says that there are skunks in, like, Indonesia or something, but it sounds like they're not actually, like, the same skunks. It's a different animal that's skunk-like, but it's not quite the same as what we know as a skunk. Skunk cast. It's coming. Just stay tuned for the skunk cast next week. It's just all skunk all the time.
That's awesome.
And we've got two really great emails. Well, it's an email and a tweet. We got one from Prefixless Page from the 425.
Okay.
And we also got one from Jackie on Twitter, both of which pointing something out. So here's what Prefixless Page from the 425 says. Tim and Jason, I just got back from seeing the film Zootopia. And this letter, literally, I laughed out loud when I okay. opened it. I got back from seeing Zootopia, and even though it wasn't a TV show, I couldn't help but notice the cop, not a cop dynamic between Judy and her con man partner. Also, Fox, not a fox. But I don't see that becoming as popular of a trend. Thanks for the show.
Wait, guess what? We just had Skunk, Not a Skunk on this podcast.
I suppose we did.
We just did it.
And then Jackie tweeted at us about the same time, Zootopia is what a 2016 animated film should look like, and the best recent movie example of cop, not a cop, turned actual cop. Yep. And then three bunny emojis. So thank you to Jackie for including us in her tweet review of Zootopia.
Because wow. I'm going to go see Zootopia. I'm going to do that.
Well, yeah. Just think about the cop, not a cop dynamic while you're doing it. That's all I'm saying.
I'm all over it.
All right. Well, I think that maybe should wrap it up for now. We're going to come back next week with a little, I'm traveling next week. So we're going to come back with an evergreen episode. That's the you'll hear it next week. It will be released worldwide simultaneously, but
it'll be brilliant.
It'll be pre-taped for your convenience and mine, but it will be, okay. I'm sure it will be brilliant, whatever is in there.
I love it already.
But I'm gonna give the numbers here. Do you want to Columbo me again? Or
no,
we okay?
I'm good.
All right. So you can send us your feedback, and we do love to get it. You can email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/tvtalkmachine. Of course, you can just tweet at us. TVTM is the Twitter account. So you just do that @TVTM and tell us what you're thinking. Identify yourself by area code if you can, and then you're set. You can reach me at Jay Snell on Twitter, and Tim is at Bastard Machine on Twitter. And that's it for this week. We're gonna turn into diamonds next week. But until then, yes, stay away from skunks.